Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I want to leave my guest waiting for another 2 minutes because he is the one and only Sandile Swana, a political analyst. Good morning and how are you?
Really good and how are you?
All right, thank you. Okay, so let's talk about South Africa's visit to Washington. It's what I find so interesting is how many news sites are using the word ambushed. I mean, did South Africa not know why they were going to Washington?
Yes, they knew why they were going to Washington.
Yes.
And usually the people who get ambushed, even in military strategy and activities, are the very people who know exactly where they are going. You ambush people who know where they are going. So they knew where they were going, and then the ambush was laid on the path that they were taking.
So you also think that they were ambushed?
Yes. Okay. Let me then explain why I say they were ambushed.
Okay.
If you are going to have an intelligent, meaningful, and productive discussion, you then advise the people you are going to have the discussion with that this is what I am going to raise. These are the reports that I have. This is the documentation I'm going to use so that they can be ready for you to respond to what you are going to raise. So you cannot, in the middle of the meeting, just ask for the lights to be dimmed. And then people are bewildered. Why are you asking for the lights to be dimmed? And then they are dimmed. And then you produce a video that has been prepared using an unknown methodology, an unknown research method, and in fact, a presentation, a gathering of data that at best could be at standard 3 or standard 4 level.
Interesting. So let's talk about, thank you for that. Was the South African government ready in any way for Trump's genocide evidence?
Yes, they were ready, and I will explain this.
Okay.
Ramaphosa said, and there were warnings before, that you cannot go to the White House and lecture Trump. And Ramaphosa said in the meeting that whatever I have said about this topic in public, I'm not going to repeat it here.
Yes.
But I am going to give the people, new people, a chance to speak. And there were four of them, four white men from South Africa, Steenhuisen, Johann Rupert, Retief Goosen, any else. Give them a chance to speak. And Rupert, on the part of the genocide, Rupert's presentation was masterful. He started going off track when he started talking about us having Starlink in every police station and all that. That was off track. The other people, and also Steenhuisen was all over the show. He was confused because he had ideological, but what was happening is that Ramaphosa gave all of them a fair chance to speak from the heart what it is that they believe, and not for him to lecture Trump. So that, to me, was an excellent way of structuring the presentation.
Did you see Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Ronald Lamole? He was interviewed on by Christine Amanpour on CNN. And he basically, to summarize what he said, is we said what we needed to say in order to get the deal done. So I thought that was quite interesting because, I don't know, maybe we just need to work on some nation building. Sandile, what do you think? Maybe that's what's been lacking all of this time.
No, the thing about it is that when you talk about nation building,
yes,
Thabo Mbeki already in 1998 pointed out that we are two nations in one. And as I have observed, even now, the white nation in South Africa wants to preserve its privilege and is threatened by the possibility of being fully equal on equal terms with the black population. So that is the problem. And that problem is not just about how people feel. It is about democratizing the economy so that every segment of the economy reflects the true demographics of the country. Because wealth and income create apartheid by themselves. What I mean by that is that even if two people are black, there is a certain amount of discrimination, unfavorable discrimination, between a rich person and a poor person. So it is worse when it happens in a culture that has been shaped by settler colonialism, violent settler colonialism and apartheid over a long period of time. Because if you are black, you are suspected of being poor, you are suspected of being a criminal and all sorts of things. So the equality, I mean, I studied at Wits during apartheid and my children went, some, at least one of my kids went to Wits after apartheid. My father went to Wits. You are already admitted. My father went to Wits, already admitted as a student, but being suspected of many things. And I was a student there being suspected of many things and inadequacies and all sorts of things. And that trend continues till today.
Are you saying you weren't naughty at university?
No, I was not naughty. That was never my line.
Okay, Sandile.
I was not naughty.
All right, Sandile, I just wanted to say something. You know about the Matthew effect, right? It's a sociopolitical theory that suggests that people with initial advantages in wealth, fame, or knowledge tend to accumulate further advantages over time. So, you know, when I look at the average South African, you know, irrespective of whether they are white or black or Indian or coloured, their quality of life has decreased since the ANC came into power. Instead of lifting up society, it's brought everybody down. And that's kind of filling the wrong direction. We should be lifting everybody. We should try and preserve and increase everybody's wealth. But it also, you know, something that worries me is that when we talk about equality, you know, what does equality actually mean? Does that mean that somebody who works at 100% earns the same amount as somebody who works 50%? Because how's that? You know, it's not based on merit. Then everybody just gets the same, irrespective of how much they work or they don't. So there's a few things that I would love to talk to you about around this.
Right. So equality to me, I can talk about myself and my two brothers.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. So, by and large, we went to the same schools, this, that, and the other, especially me and my younger brother, because since he started school, we're in the same class, you know, right up until university, then we went to different universities. Now, to me, assuming the parents are not prejudiced towards one brother or the other,
yes,
that is equality. That is equality, right? As to whether I've taken full advantage of what my parents provided and whether my younger brother has taken full advantage, it's another matter. But equality is there from the start, from day one.
Do you have children?
In South Africa, if you are born in the village of Luzup, you attend a school in the village of Luzup in Lusikisi, compared to someone who is born in Sandton and attends sent down primary school,
right,
you are already at a disadvantage. There's no equality there already.
Yes, equal opportunity, I get it.
No, it's not equality of opportunity. You are going there, at that age, you are going to school, both of you. There's nothing else to do. You must go to school.
But they're not the same quality schools.
The process of development, which determines what happens then, when you get opportunities now in business and elsewhere. So the thing that must happen is that the development process must be exactly equal. And this is the type of thing that is being achieved in Finland, in the schools of Finland. And Finland is actually ranked extremely high and most of the time number one in how their own students are performing in international tests. But the philosophy of it is equality. So that when these children become adults, the average income and standard of living of the average citizen is on an equal basis. So those countries like Iceland, Finland, the Nordic model, for instance, when you look at the Human Development Index today, they rank in the top 10 generally, right? The others who talk a lot about inequality, this, that, and the other, including the USA, rank further down because their philosophy of life, it does not accept that a child born to a poor family can be brighter than you and maybe even more athletic than you, who is born with a silver spoon in your mouth. So the job of government is to make sure that pregnant mothers, preschool children, primary school children, right up to PhD, that there's actually complete equality, then the 90% or 95% of the population will flourish. You always have delinquents of one sort or the other who deviate regardless of what you do. But you want that top 95% of the population to be on an international basis on par with the OECD countries or above the average of the OECD countries.
Sandile, you have ignited our listeners this morning. Can I get to some of these listener comments and questions with you?
Yes.
In fact, we're even going to cancel our last guest. Okay, because I just think that you're that important, this conversation. So from Dina, she says, 31 years since apartheid. What is a fair
Sorry,
time?
Just hold on. Hold on, please. Hold on. There's something else here.
Has he put us on hold?
No, I think his network went off.
Okay, hold on. So I'm going to get to some of your messages. Dina, thank you so much. I'm going to read them anyway because I'm not even sure where Sandile is. But she says, 31 years since apartheid. What is a fair time to move away from blaming apartheid? What is government's role? What have they done with the funds? I think that is a valid, perfectly valid question. Mark says, no equality. He says, the Indian nation has stopped complaining about British colonialism years ago and are growing in leaps and bounds. South Africans should do the same. One reason why there's maybe no colonialism is that the ANC have stolen all the public money and could have bridged the equality gap.
What about that? SAPC was already calling me. So let's continue for another 5 minutes.
Oh, you are wonderful. Thank you so much. So you put us off. You put the SABC off for us. Fabulous.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's get to some of these comments. So Dina has said, and you can decide whether you're going to respond or not, Sandile, but you really have ignited our listeners this morning. So Dina says, it's 31 years since apartheid. What is a fair time to move away from blaming apartheid? What is the government's role and what have they done with the funds? So that is Dina's comment. Do you want to respond to that or should I just keep going?
Yes, I want to respond to that.
Okay.
You know that only now the white South Africans are able over a 40-year period, only now for the first time, over a 40-year period to maintain educational levels. Let's say if your grandfather was a graduate, the son becomes a graduate, the grandson becomes a graduate. Only now are the white South Africans able to do that. And which means that government policy before then, the damage that was done by prior policies, you must remember that the oppression in South Africa has been varied. Some were oppressed by the Dutch East India Company, some were oppressed by the British, and so on and so forth. So the Afrikaners started gaining some traction in terms of development around 1948. In economic and business terms, they only had the breakthrough in 1988, when for the first time, around 1988, for the first time, the top companies were on the JSE were Afrikaner companies, and so on and so forth, led by Anton Rupert. So only now have they now established education in their families, the white population. The Indians, they've got a 20-year record to say, it's only the past 20 years that they've now been able to say they are able to pass education from generation to generation. The coloureds and Africans have not been able to do that. So you need to understand that once you have a system that disadvantages communities, for that process to be corrected, it takes generations, 4, 5, 6, 7 generations, 8 generations to correct what you do on a large scale as the state. So once you're unfocused, because there's a lot of wheeling and dealing that has been happening between the ANC and big business, between the ANC and the Guptas, between that and then abandoning the task. Every time you abandon the task, for instance, the past 15 years, then you've added more time that is needed to correct that.
Interesting. Let's get to some other messages, Sandile. Barbara's got a question for you. She says, why don't the government improve education for all? Why is the rural school less? And there's been ample opportunity to improve opportunity for all. Would you agree with that?
That is exactly my argument.
Yes.
That is my argument, and I think I've made that argument. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's have a look here. Gail. Gail says she wants to know if you're still fighting to keep your land. She remembers. Our listeners remember our guests.
Yes.
And you came on and you were talking about expropriation without compensation, and you were telling us your personal story.
I'm still very far from getting my land back.
Yes.
We filed our papers in court. They have refused to answer. They've delayed and beating about the bush. They have not submitted their replying affidavits. They went to BOSA, the political party, to muscle us to agreeing to their demands. I told BOSA to contact our lawyers, and they did, and they saw that there's no way forward other than to go to court. So we're still in court. I think it will take us 3-4 years to finalize that matter.
Okay. So, Gail, I hope that has answered. All right, let's have a look here. Mark says, replace colonialism with equality. He says, okay, let's have a look here. All right, Mike says, I studied through UNISA and worked full-time and didn't get to Toi Toi on campus. What does that mean, Mike? What does that mean? You know, we know that universities were often places where you could talk about apartheid and where, you know, we could actually be, what is the word? Activists. Let's have a look here. The main reason Cyril went, okay, this is about the trip. The main reason Cyril went to the United States was because of the farmer refugee offer. Before, Cyril wouldn't discuss with Trump and went with the BRICS and Iran affiliation. What else could he expect? Well, I think that a part of the reason that Trump even had the meeting is because he also wants to protect the US dollar, the greenback. Because if you look at BRICS, the nations are wanting to bring in a different currency. The greenback is very important to the United States. That's their
absolutely
trade. That is their,
absolutely,
that's their leverage, right?
That's their main thing. That's their main thing.
Yeah.
So give me a chance then. Ask me a last question, then I'm already putting the SAPC online.
Okay. could you just say that you prefer High FM to the SABC? All right. I'm just playing with you. Sandile, thank you very, very much. We're going to let you go. And just thank you very much for your time.
You.
All right, have a good weekend. Cheers. That is Sandile Swana. You know, we shouldn't be scared to hear other people's opinions. We stand to gain from it, right? Because what we get is insight. And we don't have to agree with people, but we should definitely listen to other people's opinions. Ultimately, we're going to be smarter for it, I think. Okay, look, some people, you feel dumber afterwards, but that's another story, and you're not going to find them on this station anymore. 8:57, I'll be right back after this.